When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. And what a show we have in store for you. We'll bring you two exclusive interviews as Harmy sat down with the England duo of Jimmy Anderson and Mark Wood. And we'll hear from Sir Andrew Strauss, who discusses the appointment of Brendan McCullum as the new Red Ball head coach. As well as that, we'll look back at round six of the County Championship and pay tribute to former Australian all-rounder Andrew Symonds, who passed away at the age of just 46. Plenty on the agenda then. You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. And we begin, before all of that, with some breaking news. Tom Harrison is to step down sooner than anticipated as ECB chief executive, with the former captain, women's captain Claire Connor, to take over as interim CEO. She is, of course, the current managing director of women's cricket, as well as the outgoing president of the MCC. So she's got plenty of administrative experience. But Tom Harrison was expected to stay until the end of the summer, Harmy. It looks like he's going earlier than that.
Yeah, it's hard to work out what Tom Harrison's legacy is. He came into the game off the back of came into the ECB trying to sort out the TV deal. And he did that. It was a bumper one. It was an excellent TV deal for the game. A lot more money brought into the game. And then what with, there's a lot of sort of divided opinion on some of the other stuff. Was he good for county cricket? Was he good for 100? Bringing the 100 in, all that stuff that goes with it. And then I think he's hung on to try and do the next TV deal, which I think the reason, I can only speculate, but the reason he's going early is because that hasn't come to fruition. The big thing that he leaves for me is, no matter how positive he has been or how negative he has been, whichever side of the fence you sit on during the COVID, in the issues with, from a financial point of view, in the ECB, making 65 people redundant, cutting costs left, right and centre, and walking away with a fat bonus check because of the TV deal you did the first place, and then leaving the job less than 2 months later. That, for me, that's what I'm going to stick with. And that tarnishes, you know, anything good he did in the game.
He's been extremely competent. And as you said, the bonus is actually for the perceived success of the 100. But he's been a hard man to warm to. He's been a master of jargon. And what has now been, he's known for what has now been termed ECB speak. And he's been a hard man to warm to. You know, you just sort of, every now and then you just wanted to grab him by the lapels and shake him and say, just tell it like it is.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And I think the refreshing thing that's happened in the ECB, the wins they've had off the field in the last 3 or 4 weeks with McCullum, Stokes and Key, I think this is a win as well, because they are different to their leader of the pack, which is Tom Harrison. A lot of the stuff falls at his door, whether it's his fault. Well, he's the leader. We can blame him. We can talk about county cricket. We can talk about inclusion and diversity, which probably isn't solely his responsibility, because he delegates underneath. But at the end of the day, The man that sits on the fence and just spiels sort of ECB office nonsense is I think it's that time is gone and it's a new one to come in. And it'd be interesting. It really would be interesting to see who actually comes in at the top, over the top of Rob Key, Brendan McCullum, a new white ball coach, Ben Stokes and Owen Morgan from a purely cricketing point of view, and whether they do go for another man who is an office man or they go for somebody who, you know, will look closely into making sure the game is moving forward from a cricketing point of view and not just a business point of view.
Okay, that's one man on his way out. The big man on his way in is Brendan McCullum, of course. There's a lot to talk about, but let's hear from Sir Andrew Strauss on the appointment of the former New Zealand captain.
Well, I just think he's got such clarity of thought and approach. He's a guy who keeps the game of cricket very simple, but he's got a sort of positive intent in everything he does, and that's exactly what the England Test team need right at the moment. They need some good, strong leadership, some direction. I think he'll work exceptionally well with Ben Stokes. I think that as a combination is really exciting. And I know that Rob Key, as new director of cricket, it kind of aligns up with his philosophy as well. So everything feels quite nicely connected. I know Brendan's just so excited about the prospect of coming out here and not just trying to take the English cricket team forward, but also doing his bit to take Test cricket forward generally. So it's an exciting time.
Sir Andrew Strauss just outlining why he believes Brendan McCullum is the right man for the job. People who listened to the show last week would have heard me say that Gary Kirsten was preparing for the move. That's how confident he was that he was the man that Rob Key wanted. But for the second time in 3 years, Kirsten pipped at the post at the last minute. He's quite phlegmatic about it. I can tell you that he was disappointed, particularly given that he, for the second time, got the impression wrongly that that he was the man. But they've gone for the rock star, I think. Rob Key was quoted as saying that Brendan McCullum smashed the interview, the suggestion being that Gary Kirsten didn't smash it. But, you know, Kirsten's view was always, as it was 3 years ago, that this is my analogy, but, you know, it's not far from the truth. He believes that it's like being invited, asked to come and decorate someone's house without having seen it. You don't know whether it needs a lick of paint, rebuilding, renovation, redecoration. You need to go and have a look at it, first of all. And that, again, was Kirsten's approach. You know, don't ask me for what my big picture is until I'm inside. I need to look around and speak to people.
And that, for me, is when I heard that the ECB, Rob Key, had gone away from Gary Kirsten. I was very, very surprised. I was more surprised at them not giving it to Kirsten than I was giving it to McCullum. Because I'm like, you've turned this bloke down twice in 3 years. This bloke's took two sides to the world number one with a similar captain, strong character in Graham Smith, strong character in MS Dhoni. And slowly but surely built a team unity, team environment, team togetherness to help get to that nation's number one in the world in two different countries. I thought I ticked every box, in my opinion. But, hey, what do we know? Keezy's gone with, you know, the rock star and Brendan McCullum. I was surprised. I was shocked. I was excited, intrigued to see what happens. But a little bit like what you've just said there about the painter and decorator tapping for the job without seeing the house. Brendan McCullum is an unbelievable cricketer, great man. You know, somebody that, you know, has the right outlook for the game. Ben Stokes, similar. But I come back to the fact that we want to play an exciting brand of cricket. We want to play something which is going to be expansive and positive and rock star-ish. And we're going to pick 470 mile an hour bowlers. I would be like jumping from the roof and excited if we had Mark Wood, Jofra Archer, Ollie Stone, Saki Mahmood, all these bowlers up on offer and selection to go with the likes of Broad, Anderson, Ollie Robinson, Fisher. If they had them fit, I'd be going, what an appointment this is. We've got a chance now because we've got some firepower. But all that blood and gust and the sort of humping the chest and up and at them, I'll look down and I go, well, Anderson's playing, Broad's playing, possibly Robinson's playing. They're 478-mile-an-hour bowlers to go with Craig Overton. This doesn't excite me as much now. So I think McCullum's going to have to work out what his grand plan is from the bowling department point of view, because not only is it you know, three unbelievable sides he's playing against. Got to find some way of getting 20 wickets, because you know as well as I do, Manners, if you can't get 20 wickets, England are one win from 17, you ain't going to win test matches. So you can have all the excitement in the world from the appointments. Pre-season, we're going to win the championship, we're going to win the World Cup, we're going to do everything. We get to the first day, first game, can't bowl a side out. Uh-oh, yeah, we're struggling again. So no matter how good your coach is, it's about the players. And unfortunately, from a bowling point of view, we are short of a few Rolls Royces.
Yeah, well, if you haven't got a fast bowler, they always say, pick a leg spinner. So maybe Maddie Parkinson will provide the wicket-taking glitz and rock star quality. OK, let's move on to the Jimmy Anderson interview now. He was speaking to Harmy earlier this week. They were at the Leicester Electricity Sports Cricket Club with England's test partners LV Insurance, and they were handing over a donation to the club, which will be used to train up a new coach and relaunch their women's side as part of their commitment to support 4,000 new coaches through LV and the ECB's Funds for Runs community initiative. Here's Jimmy speaking to Harmy.
Right, Jim, we're here with LV. I think the question from the deer would be, coming from Burnley Cricket Club, me from Ashington Cricket Club, Woody from Ashington Cricket Club, and seeing their very similar community areas, how important it is, this sort of, the money that goes into grassroots, to see that hopefully come back and develop after what we've had with COVID.
Yeah, I think it's massive. Like you say, coming from club cricket, it was important for my club in particular to have coaches of a good standard to be able to bring through the young players. And we ended up bringing through five or six county players, which was incredible. So to see LV put the money back in, I think it's 4,000 coaches they've raised the money for through this initiative, is great. And it will help grassroots cricket. It will help clubs maybe produce an ex-county player or even international player. So it's great, yeah.
And speaking of coaches, got a new coach. Played against him a few times. Is it an exciting time ahead for you and for England with, you know, Brendan McCullum coming in, Rob Key coming in, saying they want you and Stuart to come back in? What do you make of the changes at the top?
Yeah, I think it's an exciting time. You'd probably say that Rob and Brendan are slightly left field picks for those roles, considering the people that have been in those roles in the past. I think it's an exciting time. You know, certainly with Brendan as test coach, having played against him a lot, seeing him as New Zealand captain and how forward-thinking he was, how attacking he was, it's just an exciting time. I'm fascinated to see, whether I'm involved or not, to see what they bring. I think you get the feeling that him and Ben would actually be a really good partnership, because I do feel like the similar sort of thinking cricketers. So it's an exciting time.
It's been, I would say, you've seen everything. You know, I think the greatest sportsman greatest person that's played in my sport, and to see what you've had to go through over the course of the last sort of 3 months. How hard was that? As well as, did you ever think, that's me done?
I didn't ever think that, no. I felt like, well, in terms of playing cricket, no, I never thought that. In terms of international cricket, I wasn't sure. I didn't know what was going on. So, but in terms of actually still wanting to play the game, that's what, you know, I was sort of thinking to myself, talking to my family about. Me and Stuart had a few conversations as well. And I feel like, you know, I'm so lucky that I've got the body that I have that's allowing me to bowl at this standard.
Could be worse. It could be like mine.
Exactly.
So I know you were thinking it.
At 39, to be able to still play at this level and to perform the way I know I can, I feel really fortunate, and I want to keep doing that for as long as I can, because, you know, I've played with so many players that want to keep going but they can't quite because their body's not allowing them, or they get injured or whatever it might be. But as long as I've got the love for the game, love for the other bits that people don't see, the gym stuff and the nets and whatever else, then, you know, I don't see any reason to stop.
I didn't see the gym stuff either. When you go, just sort of to come into the start of the summer, you hear that the captain wants you, to hear that the director of cricket wants you. You then have to go and play a few games to get going. Is it as simple as it's another summer and put the nonsense that's been talked about to one side, and this is just focusing on another summer and I'm ready to go again?
yeah, I put that stuff behind me pretty quickly. Obviously, it was a little bit of time where I was frustrated with the decision and the way things were handled, but you know, I was soon forgotten. I was straight back into thinking, right, I'm starting the season with Lancashire. I'm going to try and perform as well as I possibly can for them. And that was all I was thinking about, really. So, yeah, it's nice to hear those things said, but still, until that squad's announced, you know, you never want to really count your chickens. So I'm just going to keep trying to perform well for Lancs, and hopefully, you know, those performances will get recognised.
And Ben, as captain, what does Ben bring to the table? Do you feel, if selected, do you feel a sense of responsibility yourself as a senior player to, you know, maybe rein Ben in a bit? You know, you've seen what Freddie went through. And I don't want to put comparisons to what Fred or Beefy or to Ben's captaincy or anything like that. But is there a responsibility on senior players to help Ben, but also sometimes tell him that he might be doing too much?
Yeah, I think there's always a responsibility as a senior player to try and look after the team, really. So you try and help the captain as much as you can. You know, as experienced players, whether it's myself, Stuart, Joe, you know, got plenty of Chris Wokes in there as well, Johnny Bairstow. There's plenty of experience in there, lots of test matches. So it's our job to try and be the support for the whole team, and the captain, that includes the captain. And I also think that it's the coach is also there for that, to try and lighten the load for the captain, to try and make sure he's not doing too much. He's not... What comes with the England captaincy, or has done in the past, there's quite a lot of outside stuff and a lot of noise around it. So I think, you know, Ben might need help with that sort of stuff, just to take, as you say, he does everything. He plays all forms of the game. So he'll need help, I think, outside, just to make sure he's not put under too much pressure.
And you've played a couple of games now. You know, we all see the footage of you against Joe the other day, and you know, it was great to see. You know, not only... There's been a lot of knocking of county cricket, and it always happens after an Ashes series, home or away. How good has it been to go back into county cricket and see the level and the standard rise and higher? And I can think, watching the likes of Afridi bowling at Pujara and Rizwan playing, and you against Joe. How important is that to put the knockers to one side?
Yeah, I think it's huge. As you say, after an Ashes series, everything sort of it comes under the microscope, and county cricket's the first thing to get knocked. But I think this year, from what I've seen, the standard's been so high. We've had great pitches, we have some good weather, so the pitches have been flat. And yeah, it's just, I think it will improve the standard of play. You know, it'll allow batters, when batters can trust the pitch, it'll allow them to bat for long periods of time and be confident about doing that. It'll also encourage fast bowlers to think a bit differently about the game. How am I going to get wickets on a pitch where I just can't pop it on a spot, and it'll do something after a bit on a green top? So you've got to think a bit differently and outside the box with that sort of thing. And it'll also bring spinners in day 3 and 4, which again can't be a bad thing for English cricket. So yeah, it's been a really impressive start to the season for me. I've really enjoyed it.
And the one person that you've seen close up, and you talk about spinners, something different, and I think he's not far away from playing, because of our battery of fast bowlers, they're all injured. We might need something different on a flat pitch. Matt Parkinson, what do you make of how he's gone in the winter? And then, obviously, he's had in this summer. And also, you think he's got a chance?
Yeah, I've been impressed with him. Every time I take the field with him, I've been impressed with him. Every time I watch him, he seems to get better and better. What he has got, or is getting even better at, is his control in the first innings. So when it's maybe not spinning as much, you know, trying to keep that sort of, have that control to be able to allow the seamers to rotate from the other end. I think that's crucial. And obviously, he can rag it square in the second innings when it's spinning. So yeah, I've been really impressed with him. And you know, he's been on the last couple of tours. He's had a sort of taste of international life, so to speak, or being in and around the squad, so he's obviously not far away. I think he's just got to keep trying to work hard, take wickets for Lancs and see what happens.
Are you as frustrated as Stuart when people say Broad and Anderson, when they put you in this as they're talking about the same person?
I don't know about frustrated. You know, I feel like we wouldn't have had the success we would have had without the other sort of thing. I think we have formed a really good partnership. But obviously we are individuals, and Stuart is an incredible bowler on his own. And you know, for me, would get in any international team in the world. And I feel like that about myself. I feel like we work so hard at our game, and we've got the quality to be able to offer something to any team. So, I wouldn't say frustrated, but I understand.
And it frustrates me because I don't think he's getting... You get a huge amount of credit because 2 years are unbelievable. But when I keep hearing Broad Anderson, it's like you've got to live into it. You know, one's got 600 million, the other one's got 500 million test wickets. I sometimes think it's disrespectful. And I know Stuart said that he gets a little bit frustrated on it. But when I do think that there is, and there's obviously the age that Stuart keeps mentioning, that he's obviously a little bit younger. So he doesn't want to be. You know, why am I going to be? Yeah. Why am I talking about my career finishing?
Yeah.
I've got a few years to go.
Exactly, I totally understand that. So Stuart being 35, you know, my career since I was 35, I've probably had my best 4 years in international cricket. So from his point of view, he thinks, why can't I have the best years ahead of me? Sort of thing. Yeah, you know, it's not like we're losing pace or the skills are dropping or the fitness is dropping. You know, we've set really high standards of ourselves. And that's why we've done what we have for the last however many years, 15, 20 years. And that, there's no reason why Stuart can't go on till for another 4 or 5 years.
And this summer, 3 New Zealand, 3 against South Africa, 2 very, very good sides with maybe the little sport settle in the middle against India from going home. How important is it to start with a win at Lord's or a convincing, you know, we're not going to stop the rot and not going to lose?
Yeah, well, it's massive. I think, you know, we've had a tough winter, lost both series last summer. You know, still got the one to play against India, which we could potentially draw the series, which will be an odd sort of scenario in the middle of the summer. But yeah, playing New Zealand, the last time they came over here, they beat us. They're a fantastic team, and they're hard to beat. And I think that's something that, you know, we could get better at as a team. I think that's what you're alluding to, is if we don't win, can we become a team that is really hard to beat? And that's what you need to be in Test cricket. You need to find ways of putting in strong performances, whether it's a win or whether it's a good draw. So yeah, I think starting well is always important. Starting at Lords always feels like opposition teams come here and Lords is like the pinnacle, and that's where they want to put in the best performance. So we've got to be on it from the start. And then, as you said, so we've got New Zealand, then India, then South Africa, who I feel like they're making really good strides in the Test arena. So not easy for us, but you know, from where we are, we're towards the bottom, if not the bottom of the Test Championship. So we've got nothing to lose by going out there and just trying to give it everything and try to win.
England's all-time leading wicket-taker Jimmy Anderson speaking to Steve Harmison. Many thanks to LV Insurance. You covered a lot of ground there, Harmy. I'll never forget that it was three years ago when you said, do you know what? We were watching Jimmy at his best and you said, do you know what? He could play till he's 40. And we all thought, oh, yeah. Well, now people are saying he could play till he's 44.
44, I think he could play till he's 50. I say that and probably drop him in a little bit here, but we're sitting in the car on the way down. And he came on the phone. He phoned and then asked where what was happening, what we were doing, and what time getting there and stuff like that. And just made a sort of polite comment and how the last 4 days have been in the Roses game. And he said he felt it. Trust me, he felt it. So my initial thoughts were, we're going to get to this appearance and Jimmy's going to be Captain Grumpy as normal. But he was brilliant. He was good form. I thought he had wind at first. I patted him on the back a couple of times because I thought he had a bit of wind when he was smiling all the time. But he was in really good form. Jimmy Anderson's the greatest in my eyes. Greatest in England, but arguably up there with, he needs to be talked in the company of, you look at the 5 wisdom cricketers of the century. Jimmy's in that bracket for what he's done, what he's achieved, and his longevity. And he said he still loved it. He said he still loved doing the pre-season stuff. A couple of weeks, it took him to get over what had happened with non-selection of the Caribbean. But then once he got started again, touched on the Broad and Anderson sort of comparison, frustrations that Stuart's probably got more than Jimmy. But he also mentioned the length of time that the career that Jimmy's had from Stuart's age to where Jimmy is now. And he said, there's no reason why Stewart can go on and do that. And I look at him and I think, you know what? He could go beyond this year. I really do. And I said that 3 years ago. And I wasn't joking when I said he'll play at least 40. But Jimmy might go on beyond this year. He might not go away in the winter. But this time next year, we might be talking about new ball at Lords, James Anderson. And I wouldn't put it past him. And you couldn't really knock him for wanting to do that, because he says, I still feel that I've got the drive and the hunger to play cricket. While I do that, I'll put myself up for selection.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. Right, let's hear now from England fast bowler Mark Wood, who was speaking at Leicester Electricity Sports Cricket Club, where he was working with England's test partners, LV Insurance. LV were giving a donation to the club, which will be used to train up a new coach and relaunch their women's side as part of the commitment to support 4,000 new coaches through LV and the ECB's Funds for Runs Community Initiative. Here's Harmy speaking with Woody.
Well, Mark, we're here at Leicester Electricity City Sports Club with LV. And how's the recovery going?
Not bad. Slow progress at the minute. Things are going to plan in terms of I'm back bowling and I'm off about half a run-up. But I want things to go a little bit quicker. I mean, you know me, I'm trying to go at full throttle all the time. So I have to be a little bit more patient and before I can get back off that full run and start charging in again.
And actually, I'm going to mention what we're here for in this cricket club. I just wanted to make sure that we got that bit in on your recovery. It's a great initiative when you look at the club that we've come from,
Watching
Cricket Club, and what potentially could be out there for other cricket clubs around the country. We do a lot of work on TalkSport with grassroots cricket, Institute Cricket, who we're sponsored by. It's a fantastic to see and come to a club like this, and hopefully other clubs around the country will get supported for it.
Yep, and a rebuild project here after, you know, COVID times, and they've been going through some tough times. So to get an initiative like this where they're going to support the cricket club, they're going to support new coaches, which is obviously vital, and support the women's game, which is, you know, taken off now, hopefully in this country after things like the 100 and, you know, on the back of the women making the World Cup final. So great that they're covering all bases, they're getting the club back up and running, and doing a great job. So well done, LV.
And speaking about coaches, got a new one, Brendan McCullum. Mm-hmm. What do you make of that? Also, you know, new managing director of cricket, Rob Key, coming in. How's that gone down?
I think it's all got down really well. It's exciting. You know, fresh faces we've got across the board. Obviously, Stokesy's now the captain. Brendan McCullum, coach, and Rob Key, DOC. It looks like a totally different shape. And you speak to not just the players, but anybody, I mean, going up the local cricket club or, you know, passing cricket fans in the street, they're all asking us about McCullum and Stokes. They're excited by that combination. And I think that, you know, me personally as a player, I think that's, you know, pretty good. You know, you've got Stokes as this dynamic player, Brendan McCullum as this dynamic player. You know, if we're not going to 24 and over, I'll be shocked. So,
well, he was your first test wicket.
That's right. So if he doesn't get us in the team, no. You know what I mean? He's got to get me in there.
And what do you make? Obviously, you've spent a lot of time with Ben. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, and rightly so, question marks on, is he taking too much on? Time out of the game? You know, the mental health aspect will never, ever go away. Where do you see Ben as a leader? And how do you feel as though the timing of his appointment fits in with, obviously, the way Ben is in his career at the moment?
I think he's a natural leader anyway, Stokesy. I think whether he has the tag of captain or not, he leads by example in training, how hard he trains and how he prepares. And that attitude that he's got where it's, you know, he never ever gives in. You know, you think there's three runs to win and they could have 10 wickets in hand. Stokesy will still believe that he can be the man to do it. He has that inner belief. And now that he's got the tag of being actual captain, I think the responsibility will be good for him. I know you mentioned his mental health, but I truly believe that his character and, you know, the fact that he cares for others, I think will help his mental health, because he'd be caring too much about everyone else. I know everyone probably sees him as this, you know, alpha, strong, big bloke, you know, puff your chest out. But actually, he cares for his teammates. He looks after people, wants the best for them. And I think he'll inspire people to, you know, go along the same track that he goes down. He'll inspire them to follow him in the battle, follow him when times are tough. And hopefully if he leads by example the way he trains, you know, people will fall by the wayside if they don't follow his example. So it's a chance for everyone, a fresh start and a chance to impress the new captain and coach.
And you were in the West Indies for, you know, half the trip. Huge controversy before it. No Broad, no Anderson. They've both been told that up for selection. They're coming back in. How good is that from, you know, a bowler that's bowled with their whole career with Jimmy and Brodie? He got a smile on his face this year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I wasn't sure if it was wind. I was going to pat him on the back when I seen him a bit earlier. I thought it might have been a bit wind, but he looks as though he's still, and he showed during this week how good of a bowler he is because of what he did to Joe Root, who had just got a big 100 in the first innings. How good is it to have the two, you know, legends back?
I think, you know, the skill level is never ever in question, is it? They're two of the best bowlers. Well, Jimmy's the best bowler ever, you know what I mean? So I think having them come back on the side only helps the chance of winning. I know Stokesy has mentioned that, you know, it's not going to be a transition period. He wants whatever England team we pick to be a winning side, and that's what we've got to get back to. And I think, you know, having not won many games lately, it isn't going to be easy. It's not going to be fixed overnight. We're playing a world-quality side in New Zealand who are the best in the world at Test cricket at the minute. So it's not going to be easy, but if we want any chance of winning these games, we're going to have to pick the best side we can at that moment in time to win the game. And in the best England 11, I'm sure most people agree, Broad and Anderson will be in it.
And somebody that potentially could be in it from Durham's point of view, what do you make of Matt Potts, how he's gone so far this season, and also the development? Tell us something about him, because I don't know a great deal about the individual in Matt Potts. What I have seen is he's took 35 wickets so far this season, and he looks as though, you know, he's got something about him that I think England need to be looking at.
I think, well, two things there. Firstly, I totally agree with what you said, when he's got something about him. I think that's a perfect way to describe him. The second thing is he's took all those wickets on what I would describe as, I know it's early April, but we've played on some pretty docile wickets, almost like test match wickets, where, you know, the games have gone 4 days and a lot of them have been draws and things like that. And he's been the one on the Durham side that's looked like he's going to make something happen, like you say. He's a lad that's built, you know, he's a strong lad. He's does a lot of gym work and things like that. And from his first over to his last over, it doesn't seem like there's much change. He's a fit lad. And more than anything, when you think nothing's happening, he's the kind of guy that'll get you a wicket. And I think he's proved that over these games when others have maybe struggled or haven't took the cluster of wickets. He stood up and in key moments took wickets. So it's a great trait to have, and, you know, to play with Stokesy. Stokesy's played in these last couple of games when Potty's took wickets. Stokesy will get a look at him up close. He's the kind of character, I think, that just has a go at things. Mm-hmm. I think he just, you know, he doesn't think about things too much. He just has a go. Mm-hmm. And I think
it seems to be the northern way.
That sort of freedom of, I guess, being a kid in some ways and just, oh, I'll have a pop with it and whatever happens, happens. That's what he has. That's what he seems to be. Just not take a backward step, charge in, whatever happens, happens. If it doesn't go well, I'll have another go next time. And that's what type of character he is.
And another one off the sort of conveyor belt of fast bowlers from Durham's point of view, Brydon Coss. He's back playing this week.
Exciting.
Another exciting bowler. I know Ben Stokes thinks a lot of him, especially in one day cricket when he picked him last year. I think it was at Bristol in the one day series. He looked good then. How has he come back?
Well, I watched his first over bat, and I know it's only one over, but I watched his first over closely. He ran in really well, looked strong and fit, and he was getting a tram through the keeper. And often, you know, as a taller bowler himself, you know, it's like the keeper, as soon as he starts taking it with his fingers pointed up and they're a long way back, it looks good on the eye. And I'm not sure, you know, many batsmen would want to face that. He's got, openly, and Stokesy said himself, he's got a really awkward action, one that isn't easy to pick up. And when he's bowling quick and you have an awkward action, it makes it difficult for people. So a wicket taker, not someone that's necessarily, you know, in the team to go one and two and over, but he's in there to take wickets. And a bit like Potsy, they both have a natural knack of doing that.
And we've got a few fast bowlers injured at the minute. How do you see that from somebody who keeps having to come back and going back to the well? Well, I'm talking about himself, Jofra, Ollie Stone, you know, Cars as somebody. Are we just having bad luck, or is this something that we potentially need to have a look at and change in our system?
Yeah, great question. I think probably something that maybe we might look at one point. I mean, I've been managed well in the last couple of years and managed to put a couple of years together, which I was really pleased about, which is why this injury, I guess, is so frustrating. But with playing, you know, the schedules at times, there's some one-day games while the test matches is going on. So there's just so much cricket going on. And then you add franchise cricket on top of that, which a lot of lads are playing nowadays. It's almost impossible to do everything. So with, you know, the ECB medical team, Brendan McCullum and Rob Kay, I'm sure they'll get the load down on, and they'll have to pick and choose well of when the fast bowlers bowl. It just seems a little bit of bad luck, a bit of a coincidence at the minute that all of the bowlers are out at one time. But now we get to talk about Potts and Carse, and then you get to look at more people, and then that way the pool becomes bigger. It drives everybody on a bit more, because when, you know, if they're doing well, I'm not going to get back in the team, so I'll have to step it up and make sure that if, you know, if there's a chance that I perform if I ever get back in.
And finally, you're just on you individually, probably looking to get in fit in the middle of the summer. And you mentioned there one day cricket overlapping Test match cricket. So there's the 100, the blast, and back end of the year, you've got a T20 World Cup coming around the corner. How much are you looking forward to that? And as a team, from an England point of view, you're at an age where a lot of you are sort of getting to around that 30 mark. Mm-hmm. Is this the big time to win the T20 World Cup?
Yeah, I think that's obviously in a lot of sights for a lot of players. The World Cup at the end of the year, you know, the disappointment of the one that has just gone, we'll be able to, you know, better that this year. I really feel like, you know, the quality and the depth that we've got in that one day team, especially, I mean, it's gone on for a long time. We really need to try and make it count in these, you know, we've got the 20 overs, then the 50 overs, and we really want to, you know, be remembered as a great, great team. So all similar age, all vying for that same bit. For me personally, I want to try and build up this summer if I can, and the one day as first, build it up there, and then, you know, if I can get back in the Test match side later in the summer, then that'll be a bonus. But try and get back in the England one day team first, build up there, see what happens with the Test matches, and then have enough form and have put enough good performances in this summer to try and get a spot on the plane for Australia.
Durham and England fast bowler Mark Wood speaking to Harmy a little earlier this week, thanks to LV Insurance. I mean, he's quite philosophical about the fact that so many fast bowlers are going down with injury. Two more ruled out for the rest of the season now, in Matt Fisher and Saqib Mahmood. He's had problems with injuries all his career, hasn't he? I mean, I suppose, do you ever really get used to them?
No, I don't think you do. I think you learn to live with the realisation that the fast bowling part of the game is, especially from, you know, the real fast bowlers, the ones that bowl in excess of 90 mile an hour, the big lads that push their bodies to the limits and the boundaries, that you have to, quite philosophical, that you are going to get injured, and it's how you come back from that injury. It was a good day. I enjoyed it. I spent a lot, obviously, drove down with him, drove back with him, so 3.5 hours with him in a car. It had its ups and downs, put it this way. And the fun thing element, well, I'll go about the day, the fun thing element was, We had to do, it was basically surprising a club that they thought they were just going to have a game of sort of 15 over cricket amongst themselves. And when they got to the dressing room, there was a surprise because Jimmy Anderson was the coach. When they got on the field, they were surprised that me and Ishiguro were the umpires. They didn't have an umpire's coat to fit me, so I think they had to go and get one from a lot bigger umpire. And then the best part of it, the T-boy was Mark Wood. So they've gone off halfway thinking, well, we've seen Jimmy Anderson, Steve Armisen, Ishiguro, and then they've gone into the lunch room, and there's Mark Wood with his apron on, bringing a great big pot of tea out. So he did put a bit of kick in somebody's face. But it was a good day, and he was on good form. And he's somebody who I think England are desperately to get back fit. But to go onto the fast bowler side of it, I come back to the fact that these bowlers don't bowl enough. When people say, well, why do people get injured like that? It's like they're not bowling enough. They're not bowling anywhere near enough. And do I blame the bowler? Yes. Do I blame the system? Yes. Do I blame people who don't understand the art of bowling or the bowling action, i.e. the sports scientists, the medical teams that just see numbers on a bit of paper, numbers on a computer, on how many overs the bowler, how the data of how far they've gone. I'm sorry. There's only one way to get fit for bowling and to stay fit for bowling, and that's bowling. And that is bowling more and more and more to make sure your body's hard and supple. Man, as you've covered cricket for years, you ask the likes of Alan Donald, Sean Pollock, you know, greats of South African bowling, Mackay and Tini, bowl all day, literally bowl all day in the nets, but their body was hardened. The problem I've got is every time you come back for an injury or every time you say, give a bowler a week off or 10 days off. He's putting the rest of his body at risk when he comes back, especially the big lads, especially the fast bowlers. And unfortunately, we've got it all wrong. We wrap bowlers up in cotton wool, think, oh, we need to protect these bowlers. Sorry, you don't. You don't need to protect them. You need them to bowl, because protecting them is doing them more harm than good. And unfortunately, the proof's in the pudding. We have got no 90-odd mile-an-hour bowlers fit at this minute in time. We're going to possibly take a chance on a young kid in Matt Potts, and we're going to take a chance on Jamie Overton, who wouldn't even come in question if 4 or 5. And that's not disrespectful to Jamie. But unfortunately, something's got to change. Our coaching system is miles wrong. And some of the medical side of it is you're not protecting them. You're actually doing them more harm than good for me. Sorry, rant over.
And a final word on Ollie Robinson. As Sussex were pushing for a much-needed victory on the last day against Leicestershire, he bowled just 7 overs. I think 4 of them were off spin. He had a very, very quiet day and very quiet game. Now, I'm not going to judge him at all, because I don't know how serious the food poisoning was. But, you know, he was on the field, and he was okay to bowl off spin. And some people wrote some harsh words questioning his lack of application. Food poisoning can be seriously debilitating, but Sussex were pushing for victory, and he couldn't bowl.
Yeah, and look, I've had my say on Ollie Robinson. I go back to my career, and I got questioned a little bit like what Ollie Robinson got, just as I got into the England side. And there was a couple of articles written about me, which I didn't like. And I did something about it. I went away and did something about it. A realisation that I probably wasn't ready to play cricket for England from a mentality and body point of view. Had all the skills, had all the tools to do that, like Ollie has, but I didn't have the sort of mentality that probably needed to do it. And the article was a poison one, and I did something about it. Ollie's had an article about him. Ollie's had a coach call him out in public. I've got no doubt Ollie's had countless number of senior players from Sussex or England speak to him about it. Penny's got to drop, or the penny just goes somewhere else. And that's the problem for me, is a lot of people are saying it's at the broader Robinson. How can you possibly pick somebody who is doing, you know, who is not looking after himself, not focusing to be the best he possibly can be? And we pick him over somebody who gets criticised for having standards and not happy when he's not playing, and shouts and screams and says, well, why am I not playing? Because I feel as though I've done enough to get in the side. For me, there's only one winner there, and it only ever was one winner. There was never any other than Stuart Broad. But there'll be a come a time where England go, right, that's enough. Enough's enough. You can go and bowl off spin as much as you want. For Sussex, it might be the time where he loses his central contract. But if he loses his central contract, all of a sudden, you ain't coming back. That could be the final straw, that he doesn't get a game this year. He loses his central contract. But by that time, the horse has bolted and your international career might be gone. So I think he needs to have a good look at himself in the mirror. He might have to play. He might be playing against the Turin side this week, and he might just go and get a bag of wickets, which puts him back in a frame. But from a food poison point of view, you're either on the field or you're off the field. If you're not well, don't put yourself on the field. I'm sorry, lads. I'm doing more harm than good here. Because 3 times last winter, he has done his teammates more harm than good by being on the field. And that, unfortunately, Ollie, you're going to have to look at. And if you're happy with that, yeah, fine. Yeah, if that's where you want to, your outlook of the game is, you're not be playing national cricket for anymore. You have to, you know, try and be the best physical shape you possibly can be. Unfortunately, at the minute, it seems that people are questioning his physicality. Because skill level, there's no question, the boy can bowl.
And it must be pointed out, he's a fair off-spinner as well, but that was not his job on the last day of that game against Leicestershire, you wouldn't have thought. You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. Still to come, we'll pay tribute to former Australian all-rounder Andrew Symonds, who's passed away. But next, we'll look back at round 6 of the County Championship. You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with the Institute of Cricket.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. And if you've missed any of the show or you wish to catch up, you can download the podcast from the free TalkSport app or wherever you get your podcasts. Okay, on to round six and of the County Championship and our selected highlights. We've got to start with the Yorkshire with the Roses match, Yorkshire drawing with Lancashire. Joe Root's 100, Keaton Jennings' double 100 for Lancashire, 238. Is he an outside chance of regaining his England place, I should say? Matt Parkinson, 6 for 143 match figures, 23 wickets for the season now at 23.5. But we're going to talk about Harry Brook again, because his 82 to help save the game, 739 runs at an average of almost 150. Well, you've had him at number five for England for about a month now, and that just re-emphasizes his form.
Yeah, he does. For me, he has to play. The minute Stokes said he was going to six, I think that told the country that Brook was going to bat five. It was either Pope or Brook was going to bat five, and I think them numbers speak for themselves. It's unreal. The highlight of that game, though, was Root getting 147 in the first innings, showing, you know, that he is still in sublime form and sublime touch. And that spell of bowling by Anderson up the hill from the rugby stand end. And the beauty, it was an absolute beauty. You got to marvel in the skill level of Anderson. You know, the way he set him up was fantastic. Now, if you just watch the highlights, you see the ball. It is an absolute beauty of a delivery. But the rest of the highlights don't do that ball justice. Keep telling youngsters, you know, setting a batsman up is key. You've got to think 10 balls ahead on how you want to sort of go in for the kill. And Jimmy set Joe Root, probably the best batsman in test matches in you know, the last two or three years. And he knocked off in middle, out the ground. And it was Root turning round, looking at leg stump, the only stump in the ground. Anderson, he didn't see anything. I said to Jimmy, what did you say? I said, there's any choice words there? And he said, no, I didn't say anything. I let the stumps do the talking sort of thing, just off the cuff comment. But hey, that for me is why, you know, the county cricket is, you know, that was at its best. Good flat wicket, good contest, great contest between Yorkshire and Lancashire. And two of the greatest that we've ever produced going head to head. I would say it was 15 all, 147 in the first innings for Root and Jimmy Anderson knocking two stumps out of the ground in the second innings. I would say that was an even contest for me.
Durham managed to get their first win of the season, beating Glamorgan by 58 runs. Maddie Potts, wow, 11 for 101. The fast bowlers have been struggling. I want to talk to you about balls, Duke's balls, but we just quickly rattle through our highlights of round six of the championship, and then I want to come back to the subject of balls, because the balls, there were unscheduled changes, I think 7 or 8 of them, maybe even 9 during this game. But anyway, none of that was bothering Matty Potts. Match figures of 11 for 101, 35 wickets this season, comfortably the leading wicket taker. And Bryden Carse returned for Durham as well, which was great to see.
Great to see Carse back. He'll play for England, if not this summer, definitely in the winter. He is a very, very good bowler. And I think he helps that balance this side, because he can bat a bit as well. So from that point of view, Potts said from the start of the season that I think this kid's got a chance. He's got a bit of pace. He's got an action which is quite difficult to pick up. And I watched some of the dismissals he had on a docile pitch. You mentioned the balls on day four. And that there was one or two dismissals, I thought. I think it was Kieran Carsell's one, where he sort of bounced him and it just ballooned up in the air into the gloves of the keeper. He bowled some quick deliveries. And I thought there, when I seen that one, I thought that's why he's got to play for England, because he gives you something different that nobody else can give you at this minute who's fit. So for me, he's a shoe-in. As much as Brook is a shoe-in at 5, I think Potts has got to play it as well, because he gives you something different in the bowling attack. And again, it was a good game for Durham as a whole. You know, they haven't lost many front up, but they hadn't won any. So it was a case of, can we get that win over the line when we've got our strong side out? And Durham now are right back in the promotion hunt. Lee's got a few runs, which is nice to see. Stoke spent a bit of time in the middle. I thought it was quite an entertaining game of cricket between Durham and Glamorgan.
As it was Nottinghamshire at Lords, I must say, Notts did everything they possibly could and deserved to win that game. We haven't seen Middlesex outplayed quite so as they were in this game, in the previous matches. Where to start? Luke Fletcher becomes the first and only first-class cricketer to score a 50 at number 1 and number 11 in the same match. He came in as there was one over to go, wasn't it, at the end of day yeah. two. And he was an opening night watchman. You don't get too many of them. But that's just brilliant. And then it was a run out as well that he picked with a direct hit from mid on, which was brilliant. Steve Mullaney then smashed a 58 ball century to set the game up. Middlesex managed to escape. Not too sharp from Stuart Broad. Match figures of 3 for 68, wicketless in the fourth innings.
Yeah, I'm sure Broadie next week will be wanting to get, you know, in the test match mode and get a few wickets. When he goes again next week, I think it's about bowling overs for Stuart at this minute in time. So not be worried too much on him. Sam Robson, has he knocked on the door? Has he not hard enough to say to the selectors, don't forget about me. Don't forget about me. That's another good century on the ground against a good bowling attack. But he's got to be my favourite county cricketer, Luke Fletcher. He's not going to... Sorry, Luke, I'm not picking you for England. But I love this bloke to bits. I know we had him on last year and he's a friend of the show. But his enthusiasm to be as good as he can be and get every ounce out of himself, he enjoys when he's in the field. You've seen him when he got the run out. I think he would give Usain Bolt a chance when he had the run out, celebrating and hit the stumps. And then, you know, he's a man after my own heart. He's there for a good time when he's got a bat in the hand. And this time, it was more of a long time when he went in and as a night watchman. He must have loved that. And he's a special human being that, yeah, from county cricket's point of view, he must be a joy to play with, because he's always seems to be in a positive frame of mind, and that can only be good for your team.
And finally, two draws to finish with. Sean Massoud, another 100 for Derbyshire. Jack Haynes hit his second century of the summer, 21-year-old. It was funny, last week when he scored 100, a lot of people said, oh, there'll be more to come. Well, he didn't have to wait long, because he struck his second straight away. Jake Libby had a slow start to the season, but he's off the mark with his first 100. Mickey Arthur said that the first job was to make Derbyshire hard to beat. He's certainly done that. And Surrey, of course, denied by rain on the last day. They were all over Kent, who managed to escape with a draw.
Yeah, watch out for young Jack Cairns. I think the kid's got a bit of talent. You don't want to shout too much, because you get people putting his name in headlights that are, yeah, former England cricketer says, yeah, he's one to watch. I think the boy's got talent, and I think he's somebody, I'm sure he's on the radar of the selectors for a winter programme to just sort of try and advance his first class into the next step before, you know, whether he does sort of knock on the door for England. I think that boy's got a chance. I really do. And Surrey, again, strong side, Surrey, that just couldn't quite get over the line at Beckenham on a wicket, which we expected huge runs. But if it wasn't for fourth day rain, I think Surrey would have been victors in that one. Zach Crawley struggling again. Really, can England pick him? Can they afford to pick him? Is he the only one in county cricket that's up for selection that isn't doing the job at this minute in time? And it's not as though Kent aren't doing the job, because you look at Daniel Bale-Drummond and Ben Compton, they're outscoring Zach Crawley on the same surfaces week after week after week. So it's going to be an interesting selection when it comes around, that if Zach Crawley gets the nod at the top of the order when he hasn't really done the job in county cricket for the first five or six games.
Just a reminder that the squad for the, we believe it'll be a 16 or 17 man squad, is going to be announced tomorrow. That's Wednesday, the 18th. So how's Sam Curran managed to get to 5,000 first-class runs without scoring 100?
It's amazing, isn't it? It's amazing how he hasn't got, under the talent he's got, it's amazing how he hasn't gotten to three figures yet. But I'm just pleased he's playing. I really am. I'm pleased he's playing. He's on the field. Whether he gets a few overs or doesn't get a few overs, he's back playing and back scoring runs, because I'm still in the, is he a bowler who can bat all-rounder, or is he a batsman who can bowl all-rounder? I think he's both facets are very, very good, and it's finding a role for him in the side. I actually don't think it's a bad thing that he's playing as a batsman who's not bowling at the minute. And if he can get that first 100, a bit like what we said last week about Jack Cairns, it might be the first of many, because I think he could be a batsman who can bowl in 2 or 3 years' time from England point of view, because I think he's super talented at both.
He didn't bowl a lot in this game, but he did actually open the bowling. So it looks like Surrey believe that he can do absolutely everything as well. Right, for more content on the County Championship, you can listen to our brand new show, Following On County Cricketer, which will be available as a podcast every Thursday morning and will also go out here on TalkSport 2 at 9 a.m. on Thursdays. You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and Double Ashes winner, the one and only Steve Harmison. All right, let's get straight on to the subject of England's imminent appointment of a new white ball head coach. The favourite, comfortably, is Matthew Mott. He is almost certain to be appointed. He's been poached, or headhunted, if that's the right word, from the Australian women's team, where he's done an extraordinary job in the last 7 or 8 years. They're on a current run of losing just 2 out of 42 games. He's innovative, he's creative, and a man who knows him very well is our own Jared Kimber, who was speaking earlier this week to Hawksby and Jacobs about the possible appointment of Mott.
It's kind of hilarious that he's going to end up coaching the England white ball team if that does happen, because I watched him play for years. I'm not sure he ever hit the ball off the square. He was about the most dour player you would ever see. Oh, I mean, you would have hated him, mate. He was so... Everything was a forward defence. We used to make jokes. He played for Victoria for years and was a very good player, but just... It was so boring to watch, incredibly boring. So to think he's gone from there to potentially, you know, the coach of the most exciting white ball team in the world is a bit of an about face. As a coach, he's basically coached everywhere. I always thought of him as more of an assistant coach. He's done consultancy work. I think he worked with Ireland, Glamorgan, Kolkata. He had a lot of success early on in T20 cricket with New South Wales when they won the Champions League back then. I always sort of saw him as more of a background guy, you know, working the scenes. He's been incredible with the Australian women's team. It should be mentioned that the Australian women's team has more talent than almost the rest of the world put together. So that is a huge advantage. But he turned them, they had an embarrassing loss in the 2017 World Cup. And to go from where they were to become the most dominant team probably we've seen in modern professional cricket says a lot about him. But you know, until his name was actually mentioned, I wasn't thinking of him as a potential England coach. I've got to be honest with you guys.
He's good friends with McCallum, and McCallum apparently recommended him for the New Zealand job a little while ago. So he obviously rates him as a coach, and that's obviously part of that, that there's a plenty of joined up thinking Rob Key's looking for.
Yeah, I mean, McCallum, I think, came in about the white ball job and decided he wanted the red ball job. And now he looks like he's at least involved, let's say, in who's being selected for the white ball. So he's obviously been given a lot of power in that position. I think it's a huge boom for the women's game. I don't think a couple of years ago this would have been something that anyone would have thought of, that the head coach of one of the women's teams could just move across to a men's team, especially a major men's team, in this particular way. But yeah, I do think McCallum is probably the more the more important part of all this. What is interesting is Ben Stokes hasn't coached much, but hasn't captained much, but he's the leader, so we're going to go with him. And Rob Key hasn't done much general manager work, but he speaks good on a microphone. We're going to give him the job. And McCallum's never coached red ball cricket. We're going to give it to him. Matthew Mott's the only, sort of person who's done a lot of this work coming in. He's a proper coach's coach. As I said, certainly Matthew Mott has not got anywhere based on his playing reputation of, never hitting the ball off the square.
It's a much easier job as well. The England's white ball batting is in much better shape than their test lineup.
Yeah, you could pay me to take over the red ball job. I don't know what McCallum's thinking, right? the white ball job, you come in, you go, okay, we've got a couple of World Cups here. Even if we just have an average time, we've got a chance of winning one of those. No, it's a much, much better job. I assume, and it'd be interesting to see what happens, but I assume that maybe Mott's job will be more on the sort of a day-to-day coaching. And I think McCallum might be more involved in sort of tactics and, blue sky thinking and all that sort of stuff. Because I can't imagine McCallum's going to be as interested in that sort of stuff. Whereas that's kind of what Mott has done for 20 years without really anyone paying any attention to him.
So Australian cricket writer Jared Kimber speaking with Hawkspin Jacobs over on Talk Sport. Just a quick word there. What the key, perhaps, Harmy, is that he is not only good friends with, but came with the recommendation of Brendan McCallum. So the only other time England have split coaches, obviously, was with Andy Flower and Ashley Giles, and they knocked heads, didn't they? They both wanted the best for their their teams. Mott is obviously a very fine, accomplished coach, but it's the relationship that he will have with McCallum that is so important.
Yeah, that is important. I personally would have stuck with two separate coaching teams, but one man who's accountable. But they're going down the road of this. My opinion on this is, if he's the best man for the job, yeah, great, fair enough. But I also look at this and go, ECB coaching unit is not fit for purpose. Level 1, 2, 3, and 4, you've got to have level 3 to get into counties. I think you've got to have level 4 to do a head coach's job. That's not fit for purpose. This is telling us that this is not fit. Rob Key is telling that the ECB coaching manual, or the way it's going, that because banging on it again and again, we've got 800 teams with one England coach, and that's James Foster this year. We've got two international teams with two foreign coaches. So our coaching system, our coaching pathway, the way things are moving through the ECB is not working. Something has to change. People say to me, well, why are you not getting into coaching? I'm not sort of literate enough to do level 3, level 4, and the time it takes and everything that goes with it. I can coach youngsters. I can coach people. I can talk to people about the game. Not a problem. I couldn't pass that because I'm not a bright school. I'm not educated enough to go through all the paperwork and that goes with it. That, for me, is why we are in the position of having two foreign coaches, because we haven't got good cricket brains. We've got people who are educated, who can get through these courses. And that, for me, needs to change now, because we have got two foreign coaches. Matthew Mott, he might be the best man for the job, but at this minute in time, where are our England coaches? Where are our former great players in the system to come and coach our international players, our young international players, potential international players? Because I'm sorry, I'm not saying who is Matthew Mott. He's done a great job with the Australian women's team. But if we are outsourcing these jobs, my God, we are in our coaching pathway is not fit for purpose. And that's something that Rob Key needs to change right now, because this can't go on. Again, I'm off on another rant, but I'm looking at just a coach appointment like this might be the right man. It might be exciting. It might be good for the game. But I'm sorry, we had somebody, and my history with Paul Collingwood has been a checkered one, but a former World Cup winner in T20, somebody who can coach comfortably. I thought he did a decent job in the Caribbean. Why is Paul Collingwood not in this job from an Englishman's point of view? Come on, Manners. You could get somebody at the bar to coach that white ball team. It's that good. Why are we going for an Australian? I think this is a message to say our coaching system is not fit for purpose.
I do like a man who reinvents himself, though. And as Jared Kimber said there, as a batter, he was as entertaining as a paving slab. So for him to take charge of the most entertaining one-day limited overs team in the world is ironic. Okay, as promised, we need to say our farewells and our appreciation to the man affectionately known as Roy Andrew Symonds. Before you have your say, Harmy, this is what one of his teammates, Luke Ronchi, had to say a little earlier this week.
Well, at the time, he was quite a quiet guy to start with. I think he's the sort of person that's, when he gets to know you, actually opens up more. So I had the opportunity to do some fishing and things with him while we were away, so that was always good. And as the tour went on, I got to know him a lot more and more. So he was a really good guy, and it was good for me as well. So he was a good guy to be around.
Pretty good cricketer as well, hey?
Yeah, he was really, yeah. It was good. It was good fun to watch. That was the part of it as well. You sort of see him in the field and bat and ball and in all forms as well. I think he made cricket exciting for younger guys coming through, and this, his style of play is, I'm a big fan of.
That's Luke Ronchi paying tribute to a man that he was very close to, Andrew Symonds, another Australian cricket icon who's tragically passed away before his time. Just 46 years old, he died in a car crash in North Queensland on Saturday. And Harmy, you would have enjoyed your tangles with Roy over the years.
Yeah, one or two on the field, actually one or two off the field as well, in a Birmingham bar. We had a little bit of an altercation, but it was all good fun, all forgot about after the ICC semi-final of the Champions Trophy, I think it was. We had a few choice words after a few lagers, and then it was forgot about, not a problem. I think we sat next to each other not long later in a church at a christening for I think it was Corey or Rocky Flintoff, Fred's lad, as though we'd never had any problem whatsoever. He was a good man. He was a good man. He was a fine cricketer. 26 test matches, when people see the number and they'll go, 26 test matches. You got to remember the team he was trying to get into at that time was the reason why he only played 26 test matches. If he had chose England over Australia all them years ago when he was down in Bristol at Gloucester, I think that 26 would have been a lot higher number. His all-round qualities on the field were unbelievable. One day cricket was fantastic. And the 100 he scored in Melbourne when Australia were in a little bit of trouble, Boxing Day Test 2007, will always stand in my memory because I think we had them about 155 when Andrew Symonds walked in. Matthew Hayden at the other end, and he got 150, and it was a brilliant 100. He just took it to us. We were demoralised. We were down and gone mentally, and he came in, seen that, took it to us. And that 100 would always be overshadowed because it was the test match that was Shane Warne's 700th test match wicket. And I'll never forget his celebration when he's jumped on, he nearly jumped on Matty Hayden's shoulders. It's a good job Hayden is the size he was to sort of catch him and catch him in the end, bat in the air. And that will be the memory that I'll remember of Andrew Symonds. It's so sad. It's been a horrendous time for Australian cricket over the last few months. And a 46-year-old, it's no age whatsoever, because he was turning himself into a very, very fine broadcaster as well.
He certainly was. A couple of other news items on the agenda. Luke Wright will be joining the New Zealand coaching staff for the summer for New Zealand's tour here, which is an interesting appointment. And I'm not quite going to finish on a sad note, because I want to go back to the subject of the Duke's balls, which I promised in the previous section I wanted to ask you about. But thoughts with Graham Thorpe, who remains seriously ill in hospital.
Yeah, it's sad. I've had a few exchanges with Mark Butcher, and I think Graham is seriously ill. And it's another sort of heartbreaking story. And what a man, Thorpe, He's a great, what a player, a hero of mine growing up. Played, I got the fortune to play alongside him many, many times. Drove him to the airport at the end of his career when he at Durham when he left with his, got presented with the silver 100 back for his 100th test match. And that was to be his last test match in the middle in Barbados on the back of one of the best 100s I've ever seen. And he lies seriously in hospital. And my thoughts, and I'm sure all our thoughts, is with Amanda at this minute in time, and hopefully Thorpe pulls through. He's a fighter on the field, and hopefully he's going to be a fighter to line in that bed at this moment in time.
And finally, then, the Duke's balls that the bowlers have been complaining about. We have had more 500-plus county scores this summer than we had in the whole of last year's county championship. The bowlers are complaining that not only is the seam less pronounced on this year's Duke's balls, but they're going out of shape and they're having to be replaced. I saw a fascinating interview with Dilip Jajodia, who heads up the company which makes the Duke's balls. And he said, yep, hands up, absolutely. It's a bad batch of balls. But you know what? They're made from cow skin. Not all the cows are the same. And they're hand-stitched. Not all our stitches are the same. Some pull the thread tighter than other stitches. It is an organic process using organic materials, and they will be different. That's the beauty of the Duke's balls. Not that fast bowlers have been thinking that it's a thing of beauty this summer so far.
No, it haven't. But like you say, another one you blame COVID on everything, but the working environment might have been different. All these things because, like kookaburras, we've got to remember kookaburra is a machine-made ball. So the majority of them are very, very similar, where the Dukes, that's always the beauty about the Dukes, that no two balls were the same and sometimes behaved differently. The colour of the leather, whether it was darker ones, or lighter ones, or darker ones swung more and things like that. I actually think these balls have actually done us a massive favour because the pitches have been obviously a lot better. And I think the quality of cricket, I think undoubtedly is better when batsmen are scoring runs. And I think what you get then is, you have to have different bowlers, different types of bowlers. And hopefully, you know, the standard has gone up enough to get players in better form. I don't think it'll ever appease Kevin Peterson, but it'll get in better form to make sure that there's more runs scored. That means there's more fast bowlers getting developed, or spin bowlers getting developed, and higher quality that's coming into the game. That can only make the county game better. So even if it is a poor batch of balls, I don't think it's been a bad thing for the first six rounds of county championship games.
I absolutely endorse that. You'd rather bowlers had to work harder than usual for their wickets rather than gut them too easily. But thanks, Harmy. You've been listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and the one and only Steve Harmison. If you've missed any of the show or you wish to catch up, you can download the podcast now, available via the free TalkSport app or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back at the same time next week as we continue to build up to the first test match between England and New Zealand. This has been the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.